One popular AI tool releasing voice language updates to its paid subscribers that make it easier for human-like conversations with the technology. It's 7 o'clock.
ABC News. Good morning, I'm Simon Lauder. An inquiry by the consumer watchdog into Australia's supermarket sector has raised questions about whether the major chains are hoarding land sites to try and disadvantage potential competitors. The ACCC has published its interim report this morning, looking at prices, unfair practices towards suppliers and competition in the sector. It says it's heard significant concerns from consumers about a loss of trust in supermarkets to set fair prices. Deputy ACCC Chair Mick Keogh says he's concerned so-called land banking might be preventing more competition.
Woolworths, for example, hold 110 undeveloped sites and Coles about 42. And that really does raise questions with us about whether that is... a mechanism to make it more difficult for competitors.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has rubbished a proposed ceasefire with Hezbollah as he flies into New York for the UN General Assembly. Europe correspondent Catherine Diss reports from Jerusalem.
Defying calls from allies including the United States, Australia and France for a halt in fighting, Benjamin Netanyahu says he's not even responded to the American-French proposed ceasefire plan. He said reports of a directive to ease up on fighting in the north is not true, and he's directed the army to continue fighting with full force. Meanwhile, Lebanon's Prime Minister Najib Mikati has thrown his support behind the plan, which he says will end what he describes as a dirty war. Israel has continued its heavy bombardment of Lebanon, including a strike on southern Beirut in which it took out Hezbollah's aerial commander.
The president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, has called on UN members to stop Israel from carrying out what he calls a genocidal war in Gaza and the West Bank. Addressing the UN General Assembly, he also called for Israel to be stripped of membership in the United Nations for refusing to accept a two-state resolution. Mr. Abbas claims many members of the United Nations have been assisting Israel during its campaign in Gaza and the West Bank, which he says has claimed more than 41,500 Palestinian lives.
Stop this crime. Stop it now. Stop killing children and women. Stop the genocide. Stop sending weapons to Israel. This madness cannot continue. The entire world is responsible for what is happening to our people in Gaza and the West Bank.
US Vice President Kamala Harris has taken aim at her Republican presidential rival Donald Trump as she welcomed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to Washington. Mr. Zelensky held talks with Ms. Harris and President Joe Biden with the aim of getting permission to fire long-range Western missiles into Russian territory. Earlier, Mr. Biden announced the US will provide nearly $13 billion in assistance to Ukraine. Ms. Harris says, unlike her opponent, she'll continue to support Kyiv if she wins November's election.
There are some in my country who would force Ukraine to give up large parts of its sovereign territory, who would demand that Ukraine accept neutrality and would require Ukraine to forego security relationships with other nations. And let us be clear, they are not proposals for peace. Instead, they are proposals for surrender.
The UK will train hundreds more Australians to operate nuclear-powered submarines as part of a new bilateral treaty to try to keep the $368 billion AUKUS security pact on track. Bridget Rollison reports from London.
To mark the third anniversary of the AUKUS partnership, Defence Minister Richard Marles met with his US and UK counterparts in London, the first meeting of its kind outside the US. UK Secretary of State John Healey says a new bilateral treaty will be negotiated between the UK and Australia to speed up the design and delivery of nuclear-powered submarines.
The UK has today agreed to train hundreds more Australian to operate, maintain and regulate modern nuclear-powered submarines.
The leaders say the biggest challenge is finding the workforce to build and then operate the submarines.
The number of Mpox cases in Australia has increased more than 570% since July. The Federal Department of Health data shows 724 confirmed cases as of yesterday, the biggest number ever recorded in the country. Victoria and New South Wales account for the vast majority, with the latter recording more than half the notifications. An Australian warship has transited through the Taiwan Strait alongside a New Zealand Navy supply vessel. Here's Defence correspondent Andrew Green.
Defence has confirmed HMAS Sydney has completed what it describes as a routine transit of the Taiwan Strait during a deployment to the region. The Australian warship was accompanied by the Aotearoa, a New Zealand Navy supply vessel. A defence spokesperson has told the ABC the activity was conducted in accordance with international law. On Wednesday, a Japanese destroyer also passed through the Taiwan Strait for the first time, but its passage was separate to the joint Australian and New Zealand activity.
The Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, is starting a second day of talks with economic officials in the Chinese capital. East Asia correspondent Kathleen Calderwood has more from Beijing.
Jim Chalmers held the first Australia-China Strategic Economic Dialogue with the chairman of the National Development and Reform Commission, Zhang Shanjie. Mr. Chalmers and his counterpart projected a positive tone out of the meeting, both calling for more collaboration.
As our largest trading partner, we have a deep interest in China's continued and stable economic growth.
Mr. Chalmers is in Beijing the same week as authorities have announced a raft of measures aimed at propping up the stock market and arresting an ongoing property crisis. Kathleen Calderwood, ABC News, Beijing.
Conservationists are claiming victory after an energy company withdrew plans for seismic testing in waters between Victoria and Tasmania. Sandy Powell has the details.
In a statement, the National Offshore Energy Regulator confirmed energy company TGS withdrew plans on Thursday for a seismic survey northwest of King Island. Marine seismic surveys are used to identify oil and gas deposits below the sea floor, and environmentalists say they can harm marine wildlife, including whales. The company cites competing global priorities for the decision to withdraw its plans, and Australian Marine Conservation Society campaigner Louise Morris says the decision is a win for protesters.
I'm taking today as a massive win for community power.
TGS has been contacted for further comment.
An independent South Australian MP has been found guilty of 20 counts of theft and 5 counts of dishonestly dealing with documents after a 3-month trial. The member for Mount Gambier, Troy Stephen Campbell, was found not guilty of just 1 count of dishonesty. He'd pleaded not guilty to all charges when the district court trial began in June. Prosecutors had told the jury Mr. Bell abused his position as a Department of Education employee to steal more than $430,000 from not-for-profit educational organisations between 2009 and 2013. Brisbane Airport is preparing for a record-breaking day of travel as football fans flock to Melbourne for the AFL Grand Final. The Brisbane Lions will take on the Sydney Swans in tomorrow's decider. It's also the end of the school holidays. Airport spokesman Peter Doherty says more than 60,000 passengers are expected to pass through the domestic terminal today.
This was always going to be a busy period with school holidays in overlap, but now with the AFL fans heading to Melbourne for the grand final, it's certainly boosting travel numbers, and this will probably be the busiest day of this year.
With sport now, here's Daniela Intilli.
Sydney have made no changes to the team for tomorrow's AFL Grand Final against Brisbane at the MCG. The Lions have named Darcy Fort in place of injured ruck Oscar McInerney. Swans assistant coach Dean Cox says the team is more prepared than the side that lost the 2022 decider to Geelong.
This playing group's matured a lot since the last time they played the Grand Final. You've got to play what's in front of you, and this group at the minute has been really driven, methodical in their approach.
Hawthorn have clinched their fourth win of the AFLW season with an 18-point victory over Geelong at Cardinia Park. The Melbourne Storm and Sydney Roosters have both named unchanged sides for tonight's NRL preliminary final at Amy Park. Meanwhile, the Broncos are searching for a new coach after Kevin Walters announced he's stepping down. The decision comes after Brisbane finished 12th on the ladder. Australian Formula One driver Daniel Ricciardo has been released by RB with six races to go. He's been replaced by New Zealand's Liam Lawson. And Melbourne United have continued their unbeaten start in the NBL with a 96-84 win over crosstown rivals Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
And Chinese scientists say they've discovered the world's oldest known cheese dating back 3,500 years. The researchers analysed dairy samples found with Bronze Age bodies buried in a cemetery in Western China. ABC News.
Across Australia, you're listening to RN Breakfast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Sally Sara, coming to you from Ngunnawal country in Canberra and acknowledging other custodians. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reportedly backtracked on an agreed ceasefire with Hezbollah that was brokered by the US and France after facing political pressure from factions within his government. Publicly, the leader, who's just flown into New York for the United Nations General Assembly, has rubbished the plan, saying he hasn't even responded to it. Meanwhile, Lebanon's Prime Minister has thrown his support behind the ceasefire as Israel continues its heavy bombardment of Lebanon, including a strike on southern Beirut, which killed Hezbollah's aerial commander. Europe correspondent Catherine Diss reports from Jerusalem.
Smoke billows on the horizon as more Israeli airstrikes flatten towns in Lebanon's south. The capital, Beirut, was also targeted to take out Hezbollah aerial commander Mohammed Hussein Saura. Lebanon's health ministry says two people were killed and 15 injured, among them a woman who's in a critical condition. For residents on the ground, they're sceptical of what a ceasefire will bring.
When you let them 21 days, they will arrange again. They will bring new missiles. I don't believe in them.
We must finish with this. To kill them, to stop them, to do something. But not this, not stop the war. No.
Across the other side of the world, at the UN General Assembly in the US, their leader, Prime Minister Najib Mikati, was hoping diplomacy might bring an end to the bombardment.
Lebanon today is victim to an enemy that is using electronic, cyber, sea and air attacks against us. I hope to return to my country armed with an explicit stance calling for the cessation of this aggression out of respect for the sovereignty and safety of my country.
But not so fast, says Israel, ahead of flying into New York for the same global meeting. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu poured cold water on the idea a ceasefire was imminent. Here's Israeli government spokesperson David Mentzer.
The reports about a ceasefire being already agreed are not accurate. The Prime Minister's directed the IDF to continue fighting with full force.
But reports later emerged in Israeli and American media that Benjamin Netanyahu had initially expressed approval of the proposal, but that he changed course after facing criticism from factions in his government, including from National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who publicly threatened to collapse the government if he signed on. Since the start of the week, Lebanon says more than 600 people have been killed in the latest strikes, which follows nearly a year of cross-border fire with Hezbollah in parallel with the war in Gaza. And for the 10,000 Australians on the ground, the message was clear from the Deputy Prime Minister Richard Miles speaking in London.
Now is the time to leave. While the airport remains open, now is the time to exercise your choice to leave Lebanon.
Israel is still warning of a possible ground invasion into Lebanon, but with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu out of the country, it's unlikely to be imminent. This is Catherine Diss in Jerusalem reporting for AM.
A major inquiry into Australia's supermarket sector has found it's highly concentrated, suppliers feel under pressure and consumers are losing trust. The competition watchdog, the ACCC, has published its interim findings after months of speaking with customers, suppliers and the supermarkets. It hasn't yet made policy recommendations, but it plans to pursue clear lines of inquiry on prices, locations and competition. Political reporter Tom Lowry has more.
For these supermarket shoppers in Canberra, their trolley loads of goods come at a heavy price.
They're all ripping us off. It's mental.
Sometimes you do get a good deal, but most of the time you do feel kind of ripped off.
No, they're definitely ripping us off.
Sentiments like that flooded the ACCC when it launched its inquiry into Australia's supermarkets earlier this year. Mick Keogh is the ACCC's deputy chair.
Consumers have raised a lot of concerns about high prices, their concerns about profit margins and their concerns about confusing pricing policies.
An interim report has been handed down today, and much of what it has found won't sound unfamiliar. Australia's supermarket sector is highly concentrated, with Coles and Woolworths accounting for two-thirds of national sales. Consumers are losing trust in supermarket prices, and suppliers feel they are getting squeezed. The inquiry looked at prices in Australia compared to abroad and how they align with inflation.
Grocery prices in Australia have in fact been roughly equivalent to that observed in OECD countries. And in fact, they've trended about where inflation has been more general in the economy. So, you know, around that sort of 20% over the last 4 years.
But Mick Keogh says there might be more to it. And the ACCC plans to look specifically at more than a dozen products, like beef, chicken, milk, eggs and apples, to get a sense of whether prices truly are fair.
Our deep dive of those 14 supply chains will really give us, I think, a much more definitive answer about whether that price inflation we've seen in Australia is reasonable or not.
Back at the supermarket, we ask shoppers if they venture out beyond the two major players.
I tend to shop at Aldi more because they're at least a little bit more consistent in their prices.
There's not as many of them. You know, they're further away.
Mick Keogh says location matters.
By far the strongest factor in determining where a consumer shops is location, and that is quite important because, of course, that means if the only supplier or the only outlet in a particular location is one of the majors, then that gives them more ability to price than would be the case if there's real competition.
The inquiry will look at so-called land banking, that is, buying or leasing sites simply to prevent competitors taking them.
Woolworths, for example, hold 110 undeveloped sites and Coles about 42. And that really does raise questions with us about whether that is a mechanism to make it more difficult for competitors.
Supermarket bosses will give evidence at public hearings in November, with a final report due early next year.
That's Tom Lowry reporting. The Fair Work Ombudsman has stepped up its policing of wage theft in regional areas. The Ombudsman has commenced legal action against a Queensland labour hire firm for allegedly deducting money from migrant workers for breaching the company's alcohol policy. In the past financial year, almost $400,000 has been recovered for workers from the Pacific, mainly from employers failing to pay overtime rates. National Work reporter Bronwyn Herbert has the story.
The Queensland labour hire business and Sweet Potato Farm is facing legal action for allegedly fining its workers from Vanuatu $500 each for failing to adhere to the company's alcohol policy. Anna Booth is the Fair Work Ombudsman.
For breaches of what they call their alcohol policy, and that stated that there was a zero tolerance for workers being under the influence of alcohol while staying on work site accommodation. So not while working, but actually whilst in their own time in the work site accommodation. 29 employees were fined, a total of $14,500.
It will also be alleged the employer, Bundaberg-based labour hire company McChrystal Agricultural Services, deducted money from its workers' pay for private health insurance.
Employers can't simply make up their own minds what they deduct from a worker's pay when a worker has done the work that deserves that pay.
McChrystal Agricultural Services is an approved employer under the PALM program. The Pacific Australia Labour Mobility Scheme aims to help fill workforce shortages, particularly in agriculture. Mark Zernzak is a senior social justice advocate who's worked closely with seasonal workers and those on the PALM program.
This is a employer who is on the Pacific Australia Labour Mobility Scheme. The rules are really clear. This is a complete breach of the their obligations on the scheme. The extraordinary part about this is that the employer thought that they were in any way able to issue fines out of workers' wages about drinking alcohol outside working hours. The only complexity might be the workers' accommodation was on farm and, you know, drinking alcohol around farm equipment. There are some safety issues there. You know, they could be managed though, and it's completely inappropriate that an employer would think they can take people's wages for drinking alcohol. You know, there are better ways to manage if there were safety concerns on the property.
A spokesperson for McChrystal Ag said in a statement that the matters arose during a complex time exacerbated by uncertainties relating to the COVID-19 pandemic and were promptly resolved. McChrystal Ag has repaid the underpayments and has now removed fines from its alcohol policy. The matter will be heard in the federal court next year.
That's our National Work reporter, Bronwyn Herbert. You're listening to AM, where the time is 20 past seven. And for more news, you can download the ABC Listen app. Coming up on RN Breakfast this morning, Steve Kinnane will be speaking to Independent Senator for the ACT, David Pocock. Jim Chalmers is continuing his two-day visit to Beijing, the first by an Australian treasurer in 7 years. It comes as Chinese authorities start to ramp up measures to address the country's struggling economy. East Asia correspondent Kathleen Calderwood filed this report from Beijing.
By a stroke of luck, the treasurer really couldn't have picked a better week to be in China talking economics.
And we look forward to hearing about efforts to boost growth in the Chinese economy.
And there's a lot to discuss. China's economy has been struggling with slowing growth, an ongoing and enormous real estate crisis, and low confidence among everyday Chinese consumers. So while in town, Mr. Chalmers hopes to get a better understanding of exactly what is going on. In his opening remarks at the first Australia-China strategic economic dialogue in 7 years, he noted the impact a struggling Chinese economy could have on Australia.
As our largest trading partner, we have a deep interest in finding ways to continue cooperating where we can.
Chairman of the National Development and Reform Commission, Zheng Shanjie, who co-chaired the meeting with Mr. Chalmers, also highlighted the warming ties between the two countries.
Our development represents opportunities rather than challenges with each other. At a time when the international situation is intricate and turbulent, it is of great significance for both countries to discuss economic development and cooperation opportunities together.
Earlier this week, the People's Bank of China announced a raft of long-awaited stimulus measures, including cuts to some mortgage rates and funds to prop up the stock market. And only hours before the Australia-China dialogue kicked off, the country's top political leaders, including the President Xi Jinping, pledged further efforts to arrest the property crisis. Here's Benjamin Herskovich from the Australian National University.
All of that is good news from the point of view of the Australian government and from the Australian economy more broadly. But I think Treasurer Chalmers is probably looking for a sense of what the longer-term economic growth plan is for China.
While the tone of the meeting was outwardly positive, there were some thorny issues to discuss as well. It was expected Mr. Chalmers would raise the remaining trade bans on Australian lobster and two red meat processors. Here's Benjamin Herskovich again.
On the Chinese government side, there'd also be some tough messages delivered. The Chinese government is frustrated with the way in which the Albanese government is seeking to securitize critical minerals by rejecting Chinese investments in Australian critical minerals companies and being part of a broader US-led effort to build critical mineral supply chains that don't run through China.
Those discussions will continue as Mr. Chalmers meets with more Chinese officials for a second day. This is Kathleen Calderwood in Beijing, reporting for AM.
For many users of a popular artificial intelligence tool, interactions with the software just got a little more human. OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT, has released its voice language updates to many of its paid subscribers. But as the technology becomes easier to converse with, there are fresh warnings about the potential dangers of rapidly developing artificial intelligence. Kathleen Ferguson filed this report.
Hey, ChatGPT. How are you going?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. How about you? How's your day going?
Yeah, it's great, thank you.
Sydney man Jacob Collier asks ChatGPT all sorts of questions, from tips to beat a cold to preparing dinner for guests.
How about a big pot of chili?
But now he can interrupt it, not unlike a human conversation.
It's hearty, easy to make, and
sorry, ChatGPT. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to add as well, they're actually Irish mates. So could you give me some recipes that some Irish lads might like, but also could you give that to me in an Irish accent, if that's all right?
Absolutely. How about some classic Irish stew?
OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT, says this new update features more natural, real-time conversations that also pick up and respond with emotion and non-verbal cues. Jacob Collier says it's amazing, but also a little scary.
It is actually just like interacting with another person, which is very weird.
The update includes different voices, accents, and multiple languages, as well as the conversational improvements. Rob Brooks is a professor of evolution at the University of New South Wales and is the author of Artificial Intimacy.
It'll speak to you casually. A lot of people have been complaining that theirs refers to them as baby girl. Which is a little odd.
Rob Brooks says for humans, chatting is our version of grooming each other, as primates do. He says this helps us form a bond.
You know, if we were asked about it, we know that we're dealing with something that's really a machine. It's the process of talking with them that is the thing that allows us to develop a sense that this is another person.
But he doesn't think forming some kind of relationship with AI is necessarily a bad thing.
To have something that, you know, remembers who you are from day to day, will have conversations that have some degree of consistency, will ask you about your day and react to the things that you've said about it in at least a sense that makes it feel like they've been listening to you, is more than a lot of people have.
But he says there are concerns too.
It might be easy to just have relationships with machines who really reflect back to you what you'd like, you know, or probably trained to do so. And so we might expect that, you know, we don't get the tough love, we don't get the surprises, we don't get the shocks.
Some people have reported the new update using very familiar language, even putting audible kisses at the end of sentences. Seamus Byrne is the editor of technology news platform Biteside.
We hit so many of these really quirky and sometimes quite dark edge cases that does make people sort of stop in their tracks and think, hang on, is this the way I actually want an AI to talk back to me, or do I want it to pretend to be human?
That's editor of technology site Biteside, Seamus Byrne, ending that report from Kathleen Ferguson. These days, Coffin Bay oysters from South Australia are a popular delicacy for seafood lovers, but for generations they provided an important source of nutrition for the area's Indigenous peoples and early colonial settlers. But after unsustainable farming techniques drove the area's original native species to near extinction a century ago, researchers, farmers and volunteers are united to bring back the oyster which was once plentiful in Coffin Bay. Amelia Costigan reports.
These little oysters here, these are Pacifics, you would never know where they're going to end up.
Here in Coffin Bay on South Australia's Eyre Peninsula, oyster farmers make their living growing and harvesting Pacific oysters. But once the waters here produced abundant numbers of the native Angazi oyster.
They're definitely different. They're a bit harder to open, that's for sure.
Local grower Lester Marshall says the shellfish have always been an important food source for the area.
While the new colony here in South Australia was finding its feet with, you know, grain production, meat production and all the rest of it, oysters was a really big high protein food source.
But to appease the early settlers' appetite for the flat mud oysters, oystermen began dredging the sea floor, removing the solid surfaces which gave baby Angazi somewhere to attach and grow. By the mid-1940s, the oysters were gone and slowly forgotten.
The bounty of the sea must have seemed endless because these reefs were so big, so productive, so chock full of oysters. But eventually they did collapse, and very quickly this intergenerational amnesia set in.
Marine ecologist Dr. Dominic McAfee is leading the project to bring Coffin Bay's native Angazi oysters back from the brink. Following successful projects elsewhere in the state, biodegradable bags full of shells from the seafloor are being deployed around the bay to provide the foundation for reefs to grow.
We've seen oyster communities essentially brought back from functional extinction within 3 years of reefs being constructed.
Meanwhile, ancient shell middens found in the area show how the Angazi oysters have been an important food source for Coffin Bay's traditional owners, dating back millennia. NAO Aboriginal Corporation co-chair Michael Miller says the project to revive the species is symbolic of their own survival.
You know, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now even talking about it, and protecting these sites, protecting the native oyster population that's bounced back up, just like us as NAO people. Once we were nearly annihilated, we're still here. We never went anywhere, same like the native oyster.
That's NAO Aboriginal Corporation co-chair Michael Miller, ending that report from Amelia Costigan. And that's AM for today. I'm Sally Sara. It's 7:30 and good morning to Steve Kinnane.
Good morning, Sally, and good morning to you, wherever you are listening around Australia to Radio National Breakfast. The top stories we are following this morning. We've heard Treasury has been asked for expert advice and modelling on potential changes to negative gearing and capital gains tax. But it's not the first time some of this work has been undertaken this year. Senator David Pocock and also Jackie Lambie both asked the Parliamentary Budget Office to assess five options around these issues earlier this year. Senator David Pocock will be my guest in a moment. Plus, it is that time of the year and you're going to hear one of these songs a lot in the next 24 hours or so. Sounds like the same bloke singing those songs. Maybe he had a contract for every club at the time back in 1972 or whenever it was they recorded those songs. It is the day before the AFL Grand Final, and for the first time since 2006, it will feature two teams based outside of Victoria. What a heresy. Later this morning, you'll hear from a couple of heavyweights from the Grand Final clubs, Tom Harley, CEO of the Sydney Swans, and Brisbane Lions chairman Andrew Wellington will join me to lock horns just after 8 o'clock, and we know who Richard Crabtree will be barracking for in that particular conversation. Sydney Swans supported with the headlines. How are you, Richard? How are you feeling? Pre-game nerves?
Bit nervous, Steve, but quietly confident. I'm hoping for the best. To the news headlines, Israel Prime Minister